When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Today on The Grave Talks, turning the gift back on. Jessica Angeli grew up knowing she had a gift to see and communicate with the dead. Growing up, she would find this gift to be more of a curse than a blessing, eventually finding a way to tune out of the sensitivity. Jessica would find a way to move on with life in what some would call a more normal fashion. Several years later, Jessica would discover that her own son had the same sensitivity and abilities that she had as a child, that she at one point did turn off. This would inspire her to tap back into her abilities to not only help her son navigate through them, but to help others reach out and communicate with the spirits of the dead.
I had multiple instances in childhood that I can remember. It started around 5 years old for me, and the first thing that happened was I lost my grandmother, my great-grandmother, and we were at my parents' first house that they bought together, I should say. And I was about 5, and the night she passed and we buried her, I was trying to sleep in my room, and she just kind of walked right in. And kind of just stood there and smiled. And I remember very vividly she was wearing a long black dress with red roses, and that's what she was buried in. And the next morning, I told my mother that Grandma Sadie came in and walked in and just smiled at me. And she's like, oh, no, it was just a dream. It was just a dream. Kind of, you know, doing what most parents do when they're, you know, nervous or frightened or unsure of the unknown. They kind of put you into duality and say, oh, it was just a dream. Mm-hmm. And so... later on in life, I actually found out that my mom confessed to me that the night that I saw my grandmother, she actually had a dream about her. So she also was visited by my grandmother that same night, which I found very interesting because she tried saying that I was having a dream, but really she had the dream. And, you know, you find out, you know, that a lot of times in this world of the paranormal that when our loved ones pass on, they will try to visit in dreams. Mm-hmm. And so I told my mom, you know, that's what she was probably trying to do, is visit us both, and she got us both on the same night, except I was actually able to see her in person and meet her in her dream. So that's kind of what started it for me. And then I told that was my great-grandmother that passed, and I told my grandmother about it. And I found out that, you know, she had a gift that she bestowed upon me, basically, through somehow genetics or whatever. And we both saw things that other people could not see. And to this day, she's still my go-to person when I have an experience, which I have tons now, being a medium and working in as an investigator. I always call her and say, hey, guess what happened? And if something happens with her, she'll call me and say, hey, guess what happened? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool that she's the beginning for me.
How did you feel when you first learned about having this gift? I mean, it obviously you had the experience of your great-grandmother, and then you heard the story from your mother, and then you told your grandmother about this. It's an interesting thing to try and contemplate, especially if this is all very, very new to you. How did your grandmother communicate what this was all about, what this gift was? How did she explain that to you as a child?
Well, when I was younger, I felt like it was more of a curse, to be honest. I was absolutely terrified. I had trouble understanding at first, and I didn't realize like that not everyone could do it. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I felt like I thought I was just normal. I thought that everyone could talk to these people because they didn't show up as like ghastly people. They showed up as regular people. It's not like the movies for me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that I would see people out in public and, you know, be like, "Mom, can you see that person?" And she'd be like, "Who are you talking about?" And so for me, I'd be at school and, you know, somebody would walk in and I'd look over and I was like, "What are you looking at?" You know, it's not like the movies for me. So I had trouble understanding at first that, you know, you have to kind of discern who's living and who's dead. And so she had helped me a lot with that and communicated after I explained that I was having trouble. She's like, "You have to ask the right questions. The first one being, are you alive or dead?" And then sometimes they didn't even know. They didn't even know that they had passed. And that's why they came to me, because I could see them. You know what I mean? So, my grandmother, she sat me down the very first time when I was explaining about my, great grandmother and said, "You know, sometimes people will come to see you and it's okay to be afraid, but you don't have to be. They're not going to hurt you. They can't hurt you. And they just want to talk and they need someone to listen." And so that's kind of how it all started. And I still was very scared though. That was the hardest part for me as a child, when people would show up in your room at night that you don't know. You know, there are times that I would stay awake until the sun came up and have to go to school the next day. And my mom couldn't understand why I was always tired, and it's because I was terrified. I didn't want to go to school. I didn't want to do anything. I just wanted to stay home and hide under my blankets and covers.
Sure.
You know, and now as an adult, I understand that I have a duty to fulfill, to help these people, these souls, that some of them are lost souls that just want to move on and don't know that they've passed. And I also have a duty to help the living to have closure. But growing up, I was like, "Why me?" You know? And I turned it off for a long time. I ignored it up until recently. And we can talk about that later on, the catalyst that kind of brought me back.
But, yeah, I'd like to get to that. But I have several questions about what this experience is like for you, because it's a hard one to wrap your mind around if you're not that level of sensitive and you don't have these experiences. So when you were seeing these figures, these what people will call ghosts or entities or people that are dead, that are around you, was there any sign? Is there any sign that when you're, for example, I always say, I wonder how many ghosts there are in a shopping mall. Because there's so many people. And it, when you have that many people, it's hard to decipher, you know, who's what. Is it that difficult? Is it where they're just clear as day? There's no differential. You could be walking down the street and you don't know if that person that's passing you on the opposite sidewalk is living or dead without having some sort of communication? Or is there any way to sense or know what it is you're looking at or who it is you're looking at least for you when you were younger?
So when I was younger, I had no clue. Now I kind of have some telltale signs. But when I was younger, I had no idea what I was dealing with. And then once I realized what I was dealing with, I was absolutely terrified. Obviously, when I was at home, if somebody walked into my bedroom, I knew they were not living.
Sure.
But out in public, no, I had no clue unless I had communicated. It took a while for me to realize that nobody else could see them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my first telltale sign in public that there was somebody, you know, there. If people would just walk up to me that were not living, or spirits would walk up to me that were not living, and my mom couldn't see them, obviously, and I knew that, you know, they were not living, and I'd shake my head, and she'd be like, what are you saying in your head? What are you doing? You know, I was always a very awkward child because of that. So
when others could not see them, obviously, that can be an awkward moment. You don't want to stand out when you're young as being different or something, you have some ability that others don't have, because most people are just going to look at you, and I'm sure you're well aware of it, go, oh my gosh, you're crazy. Even though you know you are not, but good luck convincing them. Mm-hmm. How did you handle that when you would be distracted, when you would see something that others weren't seeing, and especially when you weren't sure if you were, in fact, seeing a living person walking down the sidewalk and you're just looking out there and somebody goes and says, what are you staring at? There's nobody out there. How did you handle that?
Well, when I was really young, I didn't know what to say, so I just kind of ignored them. As I got to about middle school age, I was like, oh, sorry, I must have been daydreaming. And so I was like the dreamer in the classroom. My teacher is always like, quit daydreaming, Jessica, quit daydreaming. And so I say I was kind of in a trance mode now. But, you know, when your eyes kind of glaze over,
yeah,
that's kind of how it was for me. And so my teacher just assumed I was daydreaming. But sure, there were times that I'd slip up, and that's a lot of my younger years, my elementary years. A lot of kids thought I was the weirdo and stuff like that. So I didn't have many friends. I had maybe one or two, and that was it. I didn't talk to a lot of people, and I got made fun of a lot for being different. But, you know, it happens. Kids are mean sometimes. And
sure,
that's one thing I've instilled in my son to understand, is that everyone's different and it's okay, and not to be worried if people say things, because he is like me, but we'll get to that later.
Sure.
So yeah, as a child, it was very difficult. Honestly, like I said earlier, right around seventh grade is when I kind of started ignoring things and shut everything off and did my best to ignore the weird stuff happening around the house, which I think made them kind of upset, you know? I often imagine like a light switch when I want to turn it on or turn it off, kind of like a dimmer switch. And in my head, I just kind of dim it down and say, well, I'm not dealing with you guys right now. Sorry. And I kind of did that in school, I think, after I realized I was capable of doing that.
And
they kind of went away.
I want to talk about how that process worked for you. But before we get to kind of dimming it out and shutting it away from you, did you ever come across others who had the same gift or ability as you outside of your family as a child? Like, did you ever have a friend that like, oh my God, you can see them too? Where it was kind of like one of those, you know, aha moments, but there's so few and far between.
No, not really.
No.
I never found another child or anything like that. It was mainly just my family.
Mm-hmm.
I won't say his name, but I do believe that my brother is sensitive, even though he ignores it still. So I know that he had dreams growing up. He tries to say that they were just dreams now, but my mom started to realize that both of us were a little bit different. So. Mm-hmm.
So when you were in seventh grade and you were just kind of overwhelmed by this gift that you understood that you have, that your grandmother had told you about, and you decide to, the easy term is turn it off. That
mm-hmm.
I always wonder, how does that work? How does one turn off a sense? Because to me, when I hear about this, my mind always kind of goes to explaining it in a way of, well, it's like hearing, it's like seeing or being more sensitive in one of those areas. Some people can pick up on certain frequencies, others can't. Some can see great in the night and others cannot. It's to mm-hmm. me another version of a sense. And to me, there's no way I can just turn off hearing or tone down my hearing or see worse. How do you essentially tone this down? How do you make that decision to do such a thing and actually do it?
So the way I explain it is, well, as an adult now, is just like I had said before, it's very visual for me. Being clairvoyant is my strongest sense, I'd say, over clairaudient, you know, clear hearing and stuff like that. So for me, I visualize literally my hand turning down a dimmer light switch in my brain. And when I turn down that dimmer switch, everything kind of falls away for a minute, and then I come back to reality. I feel like a lot of people that grow up with gifts, first let me say, I do believe that anyone could be clairaudient, clairvoyant, things like that. It's all just in your mind in a way. I do feel that there are people, like you said, that are extra sensitive, and I'm one of those people, and my grandmother as well. And like you said, we can pick up on higher frequencies just because how our brain's wired. And I feel like when it comes to things like that, you can, while you said it was just an extra sense in a way, for me, it's all of my senses together being heightened. Mm-hmm. And when I sit down and say, okay, now as an adult, I sit down and say, okay, I'm gonna go and talk with spirit. It's almost like switching from our beta state of awakened state, beta being like the different types of states that you're awakened in form, beta, theta, alpha, gamma, delta. All those are different types of states that you're in and capable of being in. And for me, when everyone's in beta, a lot of times I feel like I'm always in alpha, at least. Mm-hmm. At the very least, which is where you're kind of in that relaxed state in a way. And then when you're in REM mode, you're in theta state. So for me, I pull myself out of alpha and I go into beta, then no one can talk to me. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. To a certain extent, it's better than I've heard other explanations made on this, because it is such a complex thing, and it's a personal thing for the way that you're able to do it. So it's difficult to say, what is it like being me? It's hard to do that if you're not that person. So I'm always interested in hearing individuals describe how this works for them, because whether or not I can personally relate to it is besides the point. Somebody out there is listening going, yes, finally someone has described this exactly how I feel, and it makes some sense to them. Someone put words to it when they couldn't. So
I take more of a scientific approach to this. I feel like compared to most people that are just like, well, I don't know, I just can do this, you know. But I actually like to figure out the scientific perspective of what is going on with me. Mm-hmm. So
when you were in the state of being able to essentially see these things all the time, you were essentially kind of living life in one state, and then you kind of came to the realization, maybe without the definitions at that point, but you realized, I can live my life in a different state, in a different mode, and that that tampers this down. When it tampers it down or turns it off, I guess that's the question. Does it simply tamper it down where you're still aware that these things are there, but they're not as stand out to you, or are they? Is it completely like the light is off?
For me, I tampered it down.
Okay.
I could still feel them, but I didn't see them, which was important to me. Because then I couldn't, if I can't see them, then people can't see me staring and can't say stuff about me.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the big thing.
Let me go to the question. You had pondered it as a child, you said earlier, and now that obviously you're an adult and you have some retrospective ways of looking at all this, and the answer to this question very well could evolve over time. Why you? Why is it that some people have this ability, or this ability is naturally just turned on from birth, and it goes on with them, and others it is not? When you look at that, why do you feel you?
I don't know. I know that my grandmother is a very compassionate person, and my mom's very compassionate, and also my brother. He comes from a very long line of compassionate people that no matter what's happened in our life, through our struggles, we've still been able to love people and love without bounds. And I feel like those types of people are able to kind of understand things from a different perspective than the rest of society.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that's the reason, but I do feel like I've noticed a trend in adult mediums and children, like my child, and how he sees the world. He sees the world so differently. And I always ask the right question, you know? I always was very inquisitive and curious, and I was one of those, why? And then it's, like I said earlier, coming from a scientific perspective, it's kind of hard to explain without being in person, but there's something called low latent inhibition. So low latent inhibition, I've found that I have it, my children have it, and I've met a couple other people that have it as well. And I can't explain it too much, but it's basically like where we see things every time, like we're seeing them for the first time, but we're kind of expanding on it. So we notice things that other people don't notice. And I've noticed that a lot of children and people with autism have low latent inhibition. And if you look at the symptoms of autism and things like that, they're very sensitive people to their surroundings. It's like being in Times Square 24/7. So we're sensitive to sight, we're sensitive to sound, things like that. And it can be very overwhelming at times. But if you understand what's going on with you, you're able to kind of control it a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
And I see it with my son and my daughter, and I've taught them lots of different techniques to understand it. And I feel like the more compassionate an individual is, the more chances they are to have gifts of sensitivity as well. I see my grandmother and myself and my children and even my mom and my brother, we're all very compassionate people, and we are very sensitive to the emotions of others. You know, in movies, I don't like to watch chick flicks because I'm very sensitive to even movies, and I'll start crying uncontrollably, and it's very embarrassing, so I don't bother to watch those movies anymore. But people with low latent inhibition, you'll find that they're very sensitive people, and I'd be curious to do an experiment to see how many people have these extrasensory gifts and have low latent inhibition, because I feel like there'd be a really good correlation between that, those individuals. But other than that, I would just say that people like me tend to be very compassionate people. Mm-hmm. And we go through life struggling, but we're still able to love, and that's what's important.
You said earlier you believe anyone can be clairvoyant, and anyone can have essentially a way to tap into this to a certain extent.
Yes.
Does that go hand? Obviously, it goes hand in hand with what you were talking about with low latent inhibitions. But is this something where many people just simply don't know how to tap into this, but the ability is there? And how does one go about trying to tap into these abilities, especially if they are someone with low latent inhibitions, but are unaware of these other sensitivities that they may have, or be able to dig into them further?
Well, people with low latent inhibition, I believe, are going to be the easiest ones because they're sensitive to their surroundings and all of their senses. They notice things that other people don't, you know, and so I always, when I came back to this, I started with meditation and understanding the self
And meditation is probably the number one go-to I'd recommend for anyone, whether they have low latent inhibition or not. I just feel like they'd be able to connect a little bit easier if they do have the low latent inhibition. But for anyone that's interested in connecting, like I said, those different states of mind, beta, alpha, theta, delta, gamma, those are the ones, if you can figure out how to pull yourself into those states, starting with getting out of beta into alpha, which is your more relaxed state, right as you lay down to go to sleep, you'll start to go into alpha and then into theta, which is your REM state. That's basically how you would do it. There are people like me that can sit down and say, okay, I'm going to go to spirit, and it's literally just as easy as training your brain to go into one of these states at the snap of the finger. I know there's one gentleman, Timothy Shaw, who literally can take a deep breath, and he's basically in that state. It took a lot of time, I'm sure, growing up over time, training himself. And it's taken me time as an adult training myself. It's taken me a whole year to get back into that, to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that that's where people, if they want to become into mediumship or clairvoyant or clairaudient, it's literally just as simple as doing brain entrainment exercises with binaural beats. There's tons of videos on YouTube that you can use. There's iTunes has binaural beats that you can listen to as you're laying down to go to sleep, or you know, in your office if you're on lunch, you can spend 15 minutes with some headphones on listening to binaural beats to get you into a more relaxed state. And it's just that simple. People try to make it so complicated, and it's really not.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, you have the people that say, oh, I was born this way, natural born medium. Well, yeah, there are people that are born more sensitive. But I feel like if you're able to take your mind away from what society tells you you have to do every day, you know, you wake up, you make your pot of coffee, or you check your Facebook or your social media, and then you go and you drink your coffee, and then you drive the same route to work every single day. You know, you do these things, and then you come home and at work, and you're at work and you do all these things the same way every single day, and then you come home. If you keep doing the same thing you've always done, you're going to get the same thing you've always got or had. And it takes just a second to do something a little bit different, to train your brain. I feel like a lot of people go through life and their brain has trained them, you know, mm-hmm. to do things. You could train your brain. You could be the boss in a way. And it's that simple.
I think it's very true. I mean, that can be looked at for a lot of things in life, even beyond this of just, well, I think this way because I was brought up this way. So my opinions on this or that are always going to be this. And people don't evolve a lot of times because I don't think that they're aware that they can. It's almost like giving yourself permission to go, maybe if I think of this a different way, I may come up with a different conclusion. It doesn't always have to be, you know, this is exactly how the outcome is, especially when it's an opinion-based thing. Trying to see something from someone else's perspective and truly understand it. I think what it comes down to in many cases, whether it be this topic or any topic, is it scares people. It scares people to think of something in a different way. So they don't do it. They don't allow themselves to do it. And again, I think in some cases, they never realize they can because they never saw anyone in their personal life, in their family life, ever do that. So why would they? Why would they? It's just why?
Right. And religion, too, plays mm-hmm. a huge part in it as well.
Sure.
Like you said, people are afraid. But I will tell you that if there's one thing in life that I've learned, the thing that you fear the most is usually the thing you should be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what leads to change, is fear.
Sure.
And allowing yourself to accept the fear. And that's how you change your life. If you want to change your life, you can do it. You just have to take that step. And that first step is a doozy. I'm not going to lie. It was not easy for me to say, okay, it's time to turn this back on
mm-hmm.
for my child's sake. But I did, and I've never been happier. I'm so happy that I did, and I'm so happy that I have a spouse that supports me and friends now that support me. I've never felt more accepted in my life than this past year when I found my paranormal team that allowed me to be who I am and didn't question me. and treat me like I was crazy.
Sure.
It's the best feeling. It's so freeing to be who I am and can help people. And people, when they say, oh, I'm a medium and I'm a paranormal investigator.
Mm-hmm.
That is the coolest thing to some people now. And it's great that it's accepted because back in the day, everyone was afraid of it. It was taboo. You weren't allowed to say that. Oh, you're just a liar. You're not, you're going to hell. You know, you got all those different types of responses, but now we live in a day and age where it's actually a cool thing.
It's amazing.
To do this.
It really is. It's one of those things where it can be brought up that I don't investigate. I just moderate these shows. And that's as close as I get. But I feel like I can have all these experiences to a certain extent through the thousands of people I talk to. But even just talking on the subject in some places still, it can be a scary thing. For many years, we lived in Branson, Missouri, which I think has more churches than people. That was one of the weirdest things, was just trying to make friends or talk to people. What do you do? Oh, I do podcasts. What's the podcast about? Ghosts. Oh, okay. We got to go now. Go get the kids, Jerry.
Yeah.
Get them away from the Satan worshiper. And it's like, no, it's it's like a morning show that talks about ghosts. That's all it is. It's great in a majority, I think, of the country now. It is very accepted, and it's another topic that's not super taboo. Let me ask you, because I want to talk about when you turned it back on. I want to get to that in a moment, but first I want to ask, when you discovered how you could turn it off in seventh grade, one more question about that, because your grandmother had talked to you about having this ability. Did you talk to your grandmother when you wanted to turn it off and say, this is too much for me? Or did you just kind of do it? I'm curious what her reaction was at that time when you went to that kind of phase of your life.
You know, what's weird is I didn't talk to her about it really, about turning it back off turning it off. Because anytime I was with her, even now to this day, unfortunately, I lost my grandfather in 2000, and she had moved up north because we're in Michigan, and she moved from the Detroit area of Ypsilanti all the way up to Higgins Lake, Roscommon area.
Yep.
And it's about 3 hours away now. And so I don't see her that often. But even now, when I had turned it off, I would get with her and go visit, and we'd still sit there and watch scary movies together. My grandma is one of the most accepting individuals you will ever meet. I swear to you, she is just she has the biggest heart, and she loves everyone until they do her wrong. And even then, she still struggles to, not like them at that point. But she's very accepting, and she didn't shun me or treat me bad or anything. We'd still get together and watch scary movies, and she'd still call me and tell me about her experiences. And like I said, I didn't turn it off completely. I kind of tapered it down, and I would still have experiences, but I wasn't seeing them. So that was a huge thing for me. And so I'd still tell her about the things that I would feel. So she knew that I could still feel them, but I wasn't seeing them anymore. And she felt comforted that I was no longer getting made fun of in school or things like that. So she didn't shun me or anything, or said, it's a gift. You should accept it. She wasn't one of those people. She just loved me no matter what I did. So I was very thankful for that.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Jessica Angeli about turning the gift back on. In part two of our conversation, we'll ask Jessica what made her decide to turn that ability back on to see the other side. And when Jessica realized her child could also see ghosts, how did it affect her and her family? Were the monsters that her son saw just spirits of the living, or something else much darker? How did she expel the dark energy out of a home when it wouldn't respond to religious relics? Are all of the spirits that Jessica can see originally from the living world? And if spirits don't know they're dead, is it always the role of a sensitive to help them make this realization and to pass on? We'll discuss all this and more in part two of our conversation with Jessica Angeli. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal $6 in some markets for a limited time only.